south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, so this show is supposed to go out on December 25th, 2022. Yep, Christmas Day when it first hits the airwaves, or the podcast waves. And to stay in the festive mood, or to get in the festive mood, how about a Christmas factoid you didn't know? For example, did you know that all 8 of Santa's reindeer are or were female? Yep, it's been scientifically proven, because you see, it's a fact that every November, all male reindeer drop their horns. So, by December, only female reindeer have horns. And if you've noticed, every single picture you've ever seen of Santa flying in his sleigh, all of his reindeer have nice big sets of horns, don't they? By the way, horns are called cuernos in Espanol, cuernos. Anyway, as far as Santa's reindeer, and reindeer are real, no matter what you think, his entire operation is being powered by not one, but 8 women drivers, which kind of blows a big old hole in the old Rudolph story now, doesn't it? Unless, in fact, old Rudolph was actually Rudolpha, a gender-confused adolescent deer who found herself a woke vet and transitioned. Hey, if you believe in Santa Claus, you can believe girls can be turned into boys with a few hormone shots and some genital mutilation surgery. Just saying. But the fact is, scientifically speaking, and this can be verified, look it up, any reindeer who's got a big rack of horns in December is female. Punto final. By the way, when you're down here in Latin America and you hear someone say, at the end of any statement or exclamation, punto final, that means period, you know, like period at the end of the sentence. English speakers, when they want to emphasize something, will often end a sentence with a firm period. For example, they might say, tomorrow, I'm going to quit my job, period. And Latinos will say, punto final. Punto means point, and final means final or end. And that's what a period is, an endpoint. You got it? Confused yet? Anyway, feeling a little down on the weather, a little congested today, so bear with me. My voice should hold up, but the power of it's just not at 100%. Anyway, around the holidays, I'm sure you've noticed you get together with friends, and sometimes you reminisce about long-gone things, what you might call the good old days, things you just don't think about anymore because times have changed so much. For example, I was talking to my older sister the other day. She says she remembers around Christmas time and the holidays, way back when she was a teenager, before iPhones and the internet, even before PCs and cordless phones, there was always mass congestion around the singular phone in the house. The one with the massive curly Q cord that stretched about 30 feet. Back then, she reminded me, and you might remember this if you're old enough, if you were a teenage girl like her, you had lots of little teenage girlfriends who liked to talk on the phone, and you maybe even had a boyfriend, too. That means that phone in the pantry or kitchen was almost in constant use. And those teenage conversations were all about boys and girls and school and dating and gossip. And you were absolutely petrified to let your parents or any adults in on the conversation, or any of your brothers and sisters, too. They weren't in your crowd, and it would only make fun of you, so you didn't want them to hear you either. So you'd go as far away as you could with that long curly Q cord, get yourself into a closet or a bathroom or down the basement hall just to grab a tiny little piece of privacy for yourself. Let's face it, adolescent kids never want their parents to be on any of their conversations or what's going on in their little worlds. Teenage time is rebellion time, remember? Now, what I remember from way back in that time when I was an adolescent kid and had a girlfriend that I didn't want my sisters, brothers, or parents to know about, or I just didn't want them to know any part of my private life at all. Remember those days where you and your parents were like two ships passing in the night? What I would do is walk a couple blocks down to the Conoco gas station or the drugstore where they had a phone booth. And luckily, back then in Chicago anyway, when you dropped a dime or was it a quarter into the slot, as long as it was a local call within the same area code, you could just keep talking and talking. The problem was, you see, in Chicago around December, it was so cold you'd freeze your ass off in the telephone booth. But that was the price you had to pay if you had a girlfriend or boyfriend and you didn't want your parents or your Snoopy brothers and sisters in on it. In fact, I remember that yellow Bell telephone stuck on the wall in the kitchen. Man, those things were built like tanks. I bet the receiver for that thing hit the kitchen floor 1,000 times and still kept on ticking. And being that I had 3 sisters in the house, that meant it was almost always occupied. In fact, I remember my sisters chipping in, calling a phone company, and ordering an extra long cord. Because, you know, back then, in the 60s and 70s, there was only Bell Telephone in the U.S., at least in the Midwest, and you could not buy a phone in Radio Shack or anywhere else. You were actually renting your phone from Ma Bell. And there were only 3 or 4 models you could choose from, in different colors, of course. Desk phone, wall phone, princess phone. Oh, and talk about the difference between boys and girls, especially during adolescence. I remember going to a Christmas house party with my high school girlfriend. We were there maybe 15 minutes, and she ran up to me, pulled on my arm, and said, "Take me home right away." And I said, "Why? We just got here." She said, "Don't ask. Just take me home right now." And I did, you know, thinking that I'd said something or did something wrong. You know, us guys, we sometimes get in trouble with our ladies for things we didn't even do. It's happened to me 100 times. How about you? So anyway, soon enough, I figured out her big freakout was over the fact that some other girl came to the party with the exact same dress she was wearing. Anyway, an hour or so later, we're back at the party. Of course, I had my eye out for the other girl, but never spotted her. By the way, it was a miracle. I even remembered what kind of dress she had on. You know, us guys were pretty stupid about those things. It's another way to get in trouble with your girlfriend, saying something stupid like, "Oh, you got a new purse or shoes or a dress," only to get snidely rebuked for not noticing she'd worn it before. And you were such a dunderhead you didn't even notice. Hey, guys out there, have you been there? Of course you have. So anyway, I remember at that party I had my eye out for that girl with the same dress. She never appeared, but in reality, she did. Turns out she was so embarrassed too that she forced her boyfriend to drag her home and she changed and came back. And now neither of them wore that dress to the party. And I bet, I really do, that neither of them ever wore that dress again. Now, I don't have to tell you that whole setup is something that just does not happen with guys. Especially at somewhat formal events where we're all wearing suits. I mean, we all look the same. We just don't care. Even if a guy walks in wearing the exact same outfit we have, we might not even notice. And if we do, we might just walk up to each other and make a joke about it. We'd probably high-five each other. It's serendipity, man. Whatever. But for young ladies, man, wearing the same dress at a party? Worse yet, for you, the guy. Forget about getting past second base that night. Now, speaking of Christmas parties, I mentioned this before, that here in Latin America, they love Christmas and New Year's parties so much that oftentimes little or no work gets done almost the whole month of December. And forget about getting any work or processing of paperwork done at all when you're dealing with government. The month of December for them is kind of a permanent furlough. And the fact is, if you're living in and around any Latin American city, all you have to do is open a window anytime after around 6 o'clock at night, especially in the last 2 weeks of December, and you will hear one or more crazy-ass parties going down in the neighborhood. Funny thing, too, you've heard me say that Halloween's catching on in a big way down here, too. You know, when 30 years ago, when I first came down, the only place or places you'd ever find a real smash-up Halloween party was at one of the big hotels on the Gringo Tourist Trail. And then it would be practically 99.9% all gringos and expats, with very few locals tagging along. The locals just weren't into it, and the ones that were not creative enough to be able to conjure up a costume in short order either. So there was lots of lag time, but man, it's really kicked in. And now, Halloween, especially with the 20-some set, is becoming a real big thing. Though Latin America's completely missed out on the going door-to-door, getting candy from the neighbors thing. That just does not happen down here. Unless it's an extremely gringoized neighborhood in a gated, guarded community. In fact, many a young Latin American kid has asked me about that phenomenon in the States. They say, "Mr. Johnny, is it true? Kids go door-to-door and get free candy from the neighbors? And from people they don't even know?" They almost can't believe it. Now, I do remember a long time ago, 25, even 30 years ago, I'd asked local Latinos, "Why is Halloween not at all a thing down here?" Yet in Mexico, they've got such a similar thing, the Day of the Dead, that they're absolutely crazy about. People flood into the streets and party, sometimes for days, and everybody's got skeletons, ghouls, and witches hanging everywhere. Well, back then, I was told over and over again, it's strictly a Mexican thing. None of the other 19 Latin American countries have picked up on it. And you know what? Even 25 or 30 years later, it has remained a Mexican thing, the Day of the Dead, because it doesn't fall on Halloween, you know. Not October 31st, but November 1st and 2nd. Close enough. So they're actually celebrating it for 2 days, sometimes even longer, up to a week. So, oddly enough, Halloween American style has spread through Latin America, as opposed to Mexico's Day of the Dead, which is only slightly related to the Catholic Holy Day, which falls on November 1st, called All Souls Day. By the way, just a personal anecdote here, something you might find amusing. In high school, I had a girlfriend whose sister-in-law was a professional seamstress for plays and theatrical productions in and around Chicago. Now, you all know that up in the States and Canada, around Halloween time, a lot of the big bars and discos have Halloween costume contests with pretty good prizes. But back then, you know, you had to be 18 in Illinois anyway to get into the bars. So, when I finally hit the ripe old age of 18, my girlfriend asked her sister-in-law to make me a Halloween costume that could win awards. And she made me the most fantastic Dracula costume you ever saw. But, you see, that wasn't exactly enough to win contests. You had to have something different, right? Some other additional gimmick. Lots of Draculas out there, but how to make a special mark. So I roped my friend Rich into going as a team. Me as Dracula, him as the Wolfman. And my girlfriend's sister-in-law, the professional seamstress, made him a spectacular Wolfman outfit, too, with real hair. And man, we won prizes. In fact, that first Halloween, we won 5 different events at various bars and clubs around town because, you know, sometimes a bar or a disco would have that contest on a Wednesday, others on a Friday, others on a Saturday. Sometimes you could hit 2 or 3 places in one night. Anyway, we got to be such a splash, we did this for a couple of years running. We won so many Halloween contests that in time, people started hiring us for events. In fact, we were invited on 3 different Chicago and Milwaukee television stations to do guest spots and skits on their weekend horror midnight shows. I'm sure you had your midnight horror guys. We had Creature Features out of WGN Chicago and Dr. Cadaverino out of Channel 6 in Milwaukee. We'd just take phone calls during the commercials and intermissions and do stupid skits. Of course, it was just fun. We didn't get paid. But man, talk about having your 15 minutes of fame. And remember, that was before the internet, even cell phones. Anyway, for about the next 5 years, I dragged the old Dracula costume out, and me and the Wolfman would do personal appearances for money, yeah. We'd do Halloween children's parties and scare the crap out of kids. And people would pay us for that. So for about a week or so around Halloween time, we'd have a decent payday, and the rest of the year, nothing. And that went on for 5 or so years, all the way through undergrad and graduate school as well. However, my big claim to Dracula fame was this. Turns out, in 1979, a brand new Dracula movie came out. It was called Love at First Bite with George Hamilton. I mean, nobody remembers it now. It was a totally crap movie, but they had a Midwestern premiere in Chicago and a heavily sponsored Dracula contest at the premiere with just loads of great prizes. Anyway, a number of Chicago radio stations promoted it. And guess who won? Yours truly. But the prizes, get this. I won 100 record albums of my choice. I could pick 2 a week out for a year. And I think it was Tower Records. And that was right when they started switching over to CDs, which were pretty expensive. They wouldn't let me have CDs. I had to take vinyl, but that was okay. But just imagine that, a broke college kid winning 100 different records. But that's not all. I also won a $500 Marantz stereo, and that was top of the line back then, Marantz. Now, adjusting for inflation, I figured that that's at least a $2,000 stereo today. But here's the killer. I won a date, or at least a dinner date, with the queen of disco, Donna Summer. At the time, you know, she had about 3 number one hits, Love to Love You Baby, on the radio and something else, can't remember. Now, I was never a big disco fan, but over the years, you learn to appreciate it. Now, being a kind of rock and roll guy, back then, I sort of disdained disco, but I didn't let on. Who's going to turn down an offer like that? But anyway, she had a big concert in Chicago, and before the concert, a big limo picks me up. Donna Summer's in the car. Plus, I think it was Dick Biondi, a DJ from WCFL 1000 AM. Or maybe another Chicago radio guy named Ron Britton. I can't remember. It was a long time ago, 1979. What do you remember from back then? So we pulled up at a famous place called the Pump Room in Chicago, a place I could never afford. Anyway, just a little piece of weirdness, a blast from the past that my sister reminded me about whilst reminiscing for the holidays. Oh, and by the way, if you're wondering what happened to my famous Dracula costume, I wish I knew. Too many moves, too many misplaced boxes. Though a few pretty good pictures still survive. And I understand my old buddy Rich still has his werewolf costume, though, like an old silverback gorilla, it's getting kind of gray. By the way, I'm still a sucker for Halloween contests. In fact, I won one last year here in Latin America, and it wasn't the first time. Now, because of lag time and the economic conditions here in Latin America, they don't give away really spectacular prizes. If you guys and gals remember, about a year ago, I mentioned it on this show. It was a lot of fun. I won $100 and they picked up my bar tab for the whole table. By the way, I went as an illegal space alien. So I guess you could say that grumpy old man thing has not quite caught up with me yet. Still got some craziness left in me, which is a good thing, right? Maybe not. All right, let's get back to what's happening here in Latin America. Let's start with an email from Peter. Now, he's one of those rare breed of guys who's living and visiting and sailing through Latin America on his own boat. And I'll paraphrase this. He says, Johnny, I built a boat from scratch south of Montreal, 1 mile from the Vermont border, where Lake Champlain becomes the Richelieu River, navigable north to the mighty St. Lawrence Seaway, or south to the mighty Hudson. I launched it in October 10th of 1977. He says, Johnny, I'm a permanent resident in Mexico and sail back and forth during the winter. He said, by the way, in March 2003, that was 20 years ago now, I was sailing from New York City via Panama to the Salish Sea in Blaine, Washington, and we stopped in Barrias, El Salvador. But unfortunately, we skipped Guatemalan ports on the way north. He says, Johnny, it would be great if you had some kind of report on the yacht facilities on the Pacific coast of Guatemala someday. I'm aware of the famous Rio Dulce on the right coast, but that's the wrong side of the coast for me for now. He says, P.S., I have a by the way for you. I've listened to you from pretty well the beginning of PRN show, being a Gary Null follower since mid-1990s. By the way, number two, in January, I'll be 86 years old. Signed, Peter. Still sailing. Well, thanks for that, Peter. And I got to say, as I was reading through that email first time around, I thought, well, this is pretty cool. You're living the life of Riley on your own yacht that you built yourself, right? By the way, he sent me a couple of pictures for proof. But what really made it unique was the fact that he says in January he'll be 86 years old and still doing his thing exactly as he's been doing it since he launched his yacht in October of 1977. That pretty much makes Peter a one of a kind. He needs to have his own podcast. By the way, Peter, many years ago, I did a long report on those choice marinas and boat hideaways in Guatemala. As you probably know, the Pacific side is not very welcoming at all. Most people dock their boats on the Caribbean side, the very excellent Rio Dulce that you mentioned. You really have to see it to believe it. And the prices to dock are unbelievable, too. All right, shifting gears a bit. You know, I fully understand a lot of people don't like Bitcoin. They don't get it. They never spent any time trying to investigate it, especially the boomer generation who weren't born with cell phones in their hands. You know, they're the generation that was practically dragged kicking and screaming into the tech and IT revolution. We can't expect them to care about crypto. They had a hard enough time with emails and Skype. A great percentage of them have to ask a young kid to help them download an app. No wonder they're afraid of crypto and continuously diss it. But what really is the hallmark that shows me how little a person knows about Bitcoin and crypto is when they lump in Bitcoin with that latest FTX blowout fraud that's now affected practically every market. So for you Bitcoin haters and non-believers, let me state once and for all, Bitcoin was not a part of or involved in the FTX scam / scandal. And anyone who says it was a Bitcoin scam is completely ignorant of the facts and has done no real research. They're just following the lame street party line. If you think logically and actually look at the data, you'll see it was a scam that involved 100% shitcoins, not Bitcoin. And if you don't know the difference between Bitcoin and shitcoin, you'd be better off biting your tongue lest you look ignorant in front of people who are really in the know. Oh, and another thing, if you don't know the difference between decentralized cryptocurrencies and centralized cryptocurrencies, you best bite your tongue and shut up too, because they're completely different animals and cannot be lumped together. In fact, Bitcoin is the only truly decentralized cryptocurrency. That means no one can screw with it. It's running on thousands and thousands of nodes on thousands and thousands of computers, all open source. And the only way the software can be changed at all is if all those thousands of thousands of people running those nodes agree on those changes, whatever someone might propose. That's why it's called decentralized, because that'll never happen. It's hard enough to get two or three or even four people to agree on a change, much less tens of thousands. That's, by the way, one of the definitions of a shitcoin. It's a coin, a crypto, that's centralized, not decentralized. By the way, every other crypto out there besides Bitcoin is considered a shitcoin, with a few very small exceptions. Because a small group of nerdy tech guys got together and created that coin and control the algorithm, the software. In other words, shitcoins can be manipulated by a small group of people that created them behind closed doors in a non-transparent way. And it's that non-transparency issue that gets them into trouble. And that's exactly what happened in that FTX scam. So then you might ask, why do people buy shitcoin tokens then, if Bitcoin's so much better and is utterly transparent and can't be manipulated? Well, that's because people are greedy. And here's how it works. If you buy Bitcoin, the only way it goes up in price is if the whole market moves upward. In other words, your Bitcoin does not earn interest. You're counting on the market to move if you want to make a profit. You're counting on supply and demand, market scarcity and all that. Now, suppose I said to you, there are lots of other coins out there beside Bitcoin that pay 5, 10, 15, 20, even 30% interest, like a real high-earning CD or bank account. Of course, you know you can't get those kind of rates from a bank or a CD, which should have raised immediate red flags, but some people don't see that. So the greed in people says, okay, what do I have to do? Well, you can buy those different shitcoin tokens that promise that. For example, FTX, leave it on an exchange, and it's as good as being in the bank. But it's not, because you've heard the saying, not your keys, not your coins. If you have anything on an exchange, you have to have complete confidence and trust in the people running it. Now, if you don't understand what an exchange is, that's where you go to purchase any kind of crypto, including Bitcoin. The whole key is, though, and longtime Bitcoiners know this well, you go on an exchange, you buy your Bitcoin, and you take it off right away, probably like within the hour or two. You drop it into a cold wallet like a Trezor and a Nano, and nobody but you has access to it. It's yours because you got the keys and your coins now. Then the exchange you bought it on, like for example Coinbase or FTX, whatever, could implode tomorrow and it doesn't affect you at all. You've still got your coins and your keys on your cold wallet. The thing is, in order to get those high interest rates, you have to keep your coins on exchanges, which is never a good idea. I've been saying that for years. It's all about trust and confidence. And what a scam went down with FTX, because people trusted him. They hired superstar celebrity spokesmen to promote the stuff. You know the story. Anyway, what really pisses me off is when I hear very smart people, experts in their own field, talking shit about Bitcoin as if it had something to do with this FTX thing. It did not. You're showing your lack of knowledge and understanding by even bringing it up. By the way, most of these guys are boomers. Some of them even have shows on this very station. They're truly ignorant on the subject. They don't know what they're talking about, but they've got a platform. They just don't get there's a huge, massive difference between Bitcoin and all the rest of those shitcoins out there, like that FTX token that went down. The thing is, you do not absorb this blockchain stuff through osmosis by listening to little sound bites here and there from the talking heads on CNN. The only ones that truly understand it are nerds and non-nerds who spent at least 5 hours of their life thoroughly investigating blockchain technology. Like, for example, reading the book, The Bitcoin Standard. Probably take you 7 or 8 hours to read it. And believe me, by then, you'll get it. You'll never call Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme again, nor lump it in ever again with any of the hundreds of different shitcoins. Oh, and by the way, over the last couple of years since the crypto revolution, I've had the opportunity to talk to scads of super intelligent, nerdy engineer types. Let me tell you, something's happening here that's only happened maybe twice in the last 50 years. Since Bitcoin arrived around 12 years ago, the vast majority of engineers and financial people too, the smartest nerds in the world, they're not setting their career sights on NASA or Wall Street or commodities or big tech. They're diving headfirst into blockchain technology. They no longer want to work at Google, Microsoft, or even Tesla. They want to invent and innovate in the blockchain space. And when the best and brightest minds in the world make such a shift like that, you follow the brains, not the money. Like I said, it's happened only twice in the last 50 years. And each time it's completely changed the world. First time was when PC computers got invented in the 70s and 80s. The second time was in the 90s, right after the internet took off. Those are the only other two times in the last 50 years where the best and brightest minds ditch conventional careers and opportunities for a brand new technology. Oh, and the next time some intelligent boomer, you know, tries to tell you Bitcoin's a scam and a Ponzi scheme, look what happened to FTX. Just ask him two questions. Ask him to define centralized versus decentralized crypto, and ask him to explain the difference between a shitcoin and Bitcoin. Oh, and if you yourself are still confused about it, you may need to put in that extra 3 to 5 hours of study before everything begins to click. Better yet, read the book called The Bitcoin Standard. Believe me, it's interesting, not dry, an enjoyable read. In fact, if you send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, I'll send you a copy. By the way, speaking of doing your own research, isn't it funny? Before COVID, doing your own research used to be called reading. You know, reading, R-E-A-D-I-N-G. Oh, and as a corollary to that, isn't it funny that I've never met a stupid person who regularly reads books? I know. Most people don't have time for books anymore. It's a lost art. And I'm not talking about reading pre-digested social media word chunks. That's not reading. By the way, you know, in the past, I had a couple of successful businesses. Occasionally, I'd have to hire people. Oh, and of course, I had my share of unsuccessful businesses, too. Either way, you have to interview people. Now, you might think I'm a little strange, but along with the regular interview process, you know, when you sit down and talk and ask questions, I found there were two very good ways to qualify a person. Ways you never hear so-called interview or resume experts talk about. Number one, I'd take them to lunch and insist we go in their car. I'll tell you, you can learn a lot about a person by looking in the back seat of their car. And usually, the interviewee will try to get out of it. Because, you know, everyone's got a certain amount of junk or disorder in their car, right? So it is a good way to tell how piggish and or disorganized or organized that person happens to be. Oh, and by the fast food wrappers, you could tell how bad their diet is, too. Now, of course, if you're interviewing someone in Latin America, they probably won't have a car, so you won't get that far. But you'll learn a lot with the next interview question, which is, what were the last two books you've read, and how long ago did you read them? Man, if you want to see someone panic, then again, I know some college graduates up in the States. In fact, my sister's ex-husband, he takes pride in the fact that he hasn't read a single book since college. Then, of course, there's always those pretentious Americans and gringos and expats who got books around the house just for show. They never actually cracked them. But hey, that's the way of the world. Yep, that's the way of the world. Which is also a pretty cool song by Earth, Wind, and Fire. But I digress as usual. Don't worry, though. Next show will be right back to living in Latin America.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.